Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, 2009, Kartik, Sri Radhakund, this is class number 5. This is Ashwin Purnima. This is the conclusion of the Sadhana Bhakti chapter. Rupa Goswami has described the 64 limbs of devotion and especially emphasized what he calls the Panchanga Bhakti, which we've been discussing. Kirtan, Sankirtan, deity worship. After concluding, he mentions these 5 are the most important devotional transcendental activities of bhakti. Nam Sankirtan, worshipping the deities, associating with devotees, living in a holy place or surrounded by devotees, especially Mathura Mandala, Raj Mandala, and studying and tasting Srimad Bhagavatam. By serving Srimad Bhagavatam and hearing from advanced devotees. So these 5 activities are pure devotional limbs, bhakti anga, shud bhakti anga. Now, concluding the chapter, he's comparing bhakti with 2 other popular paths, the bhakti marg, gyan marg, and karma marg, or yoga marg. Yoga marg means vairagya, vairagya and gyan and vairagya, knowledge and detachment. Basically, we know from the Bhagavatam that the bhakti path automatically brings knowledge and detachment. Because the bhakti is transcendental, it pleases Krishna. And when Krishna is pleased, then he gives you transcendental knowledge. From Krishna comes knowledge, and he gives you detachment. He gives you detachment by giving you attachment. Krishna gives his love. Bhakti means love. When you engage in Krishna bhakti, then you receive Krishna's love. And that love fills you with satisfaction, peace, and happiness. You become attached to Krishna. And when you become attached to Krishna, you naturally become detached from everything else. You may have so many girlfriends, but one you marry, so hopefully the one you marry you're more attached to than all your other girlfriends. And you may rip up their phone, or take their phone numbers out of your diary, or let's say nowadays, erase them from your cell phone, because now you found number one. Or the perfect one, or so-called ideal one. So Krishna is that perfect ideal, lover, friend, servant, master, beloved, father, supporter. So this is how bhakti creates automatically knowledge. Krishna gives knowledge directly, all tattva-gyan. And bhakti creates detachment. So he's having this discussion about jnana and vairagya, and he wants us to be clear that what is the unique aspect of Gyan. So he's been citing different verses concluding his chapter, and then Jiva Goswami has been giving commentaries about these verses of Rupa Goswami from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So we have a very clear conception of what is bhakti as compared to karma and Gyan, and we're also very sure that the path we're engaged in is sufficient. It's complete in itself. It is not lacking anything, and we don't require any additional practices of karma again. So this is text 250. It's from Bhagavatam. Tasmad mad bhakti yuktasya yogano vai vanatmanaha na jnanam na cha vairagyam prayakshayo bhavet iha. This is Uddhav Gita. Krishna speaking to Uddhav. He said, for a devotee engaged in my loving service, Krishna is telling Uddhav, if someone is my bhakta, mad-bhakta, mad-bhakti-yuktasya, with his mind fixed on me, the cultivation of knowledge, which means brahma-gyan, there's different kinds of gyan, so when we're talking about gyan, the path of gyan, it usually means brahma-gyan, means an impersonal path. The Brahma-sayujya, the goal, the gati of the impersonal jnan path is Brahma-sayujya. Aham Brahmasmi, Tattvamasi, Tattvamasi Soham, that I am that, I am Brahman, Soham. So one must differentiate. There's 2 types of knowledge. There's Brahma-jnan and Bhakti-jnan. Bhakti-jnan includes Bhagavat, Bhagavad-jnan, and which means knowledge of Bhagavan, and knowledge of the avatars, knowledge of all the different personal aspects and abodes of the Lord. And that's what it's mentioned in parentheses. So Krishna says that the cultivation of impersonal knowledge, or this Brahmagyan, and renunciation is generally not the means of achieving the highest perfection within this world. Then he says, Kintu jnana viraktyadi sadyam bhaktyeva siddhyati. The goals of jnana and vairagya and other processes are achieved by bhakti alone. So what is the goal of jnana? Mukti, liberation. What is the goal of vairagya? Jnana. In other words, by performing, by self-denial, by tap, by penances, austerities, and subjecting the body to various, you can say, tortures, by depriving oneself of food and chanting mantras and performing very difficult physical postures, standing in the icy cold water or surrounding yourself by five pancha agni fires and fire of the sun, and many types of things, austerities I do in the name of vairagya. The whole purpose of all this vairagya is to realize what? I am not the body. Aham Brahmasmi. Because this is gyan. This is real gyan. I'm not talking about computer science. Computer science or BCom, hotel management, or these international law, or these are fields of knowledge, but we're speaking about spiritual knowledge, Brahma-gyan, knowledge of Brahman or spirit, which is only the beginning. So vairagya leads to this gyan, but Rupa Goswami is saying that without some touch of bhakti, even these paths will not be successful. In our notes, we have some mention about, some description of jnana and vairagya. This is the relationship of jnana and vairagya to bhakti. When one begins the path of bhakti or devotion to God, Vishnu bhakti, Krishna bhakti, Ram bhakti, etc., Bhagavan bhakti, Bhagavat bhakti, some minimal jnana and vairagya is useful. But we must understand that jnana and vairagya are not actually bhakti directly. When the Shastra uses the word jnana, it generally refers to a specific type of knowledge of the impersonal absolute truth. Jnana means Brahma-jnana, knowledge of Brahman. Brahma-jnana includes three types of knowledge. One is knowledge of Brahman, two is knowledge of the living entity, and three is the knowledge or understanding or realization of the oneness of both. I am Brahman. Aham Brahmasmi. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when Rupa Goswami says that jnana is not necessary for bhakti, he is referring to this type of jnana, Brahma jnana. However, knowledge of Krishna or knowledge related to Krishna's name, Krishna's Nam Rup Gun Lila, is necessary and useful. The path of Brahma jnana depends on vairagya. If one is materially attached, this limits one and prevents realization of the absolute nature of Brahman. Jnana is always dependent on vairagya. On the path of bhakti, only that type of vairagya or detachment, which is not contrary or against devotion or bhakti, is acceptable. Jnana and vairagya is a little helpful only in the start because it helps remove one's absorption in things which are not related to bhakti. For example, to have some knowledge of Krishna, it's very important to start knowledge of how to practice devotional service, how to do puja, archanam, how to chant, and who is Krishna, who am I, the sambandha jnana. What is this world? The five subjects of the Bhagavad Gita, This is Bhakti Gyan, Ishvara Tattva, Jiva Tattva, Prakriti Tattva, Kala Tattva, and Karma Tattva. So these are the five subjects, these are five branches of knowledge that are described in Bhagavad Gita. Who is the Ishvara? Aham sarvasya prabhava matas sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajanti vam buddha bhava samanvitaha. Krishna is saying in Gita that I am the source of everything. So this is a whole discussion about jnana and vairagya, which after the 64 limbs of devotion are discussed, then Rupa Goswami is concluding the sadhana bhakti chapter by describing how bhakti does it all. Bhakti provides jnana and vairagya. Jiva Goswami is making a distinction that when Rupa Goswami is saying there's no need for jnana, it means Brahma jnana, which is knowledge of Brahman, knowledge of the living entity, and knowledge of the oneness of both. Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. But we do need knowledge of Krishna, Sambandha jnana, who is Krishna, what is this world, this basic understanding that I am Krishna's eternal servant, he is great, I am small, he is the master, I am the servant. The purpose of human life is to serve the personal God. I am an individual person. I have an individual relationship with God. This is the basic knowledge one has to have. And the vairagya means that we give up things which are against Krishna. Like we want to eat Krishna prasadam. Because sanctified food which is offered in yajna is called yajna book or yajna phal, yajna shishta. Yagya Shishta. And Gita chapter 3, verse 13, that verse is there. Yagya Shishashino Shanto. Muchyanti Sarvakil Bashayi. Yagya Shisht means food which is first offered in Yagya and taken afterwards. As far as Vishnu Bhakti goes, the Yagya is to offer Boga to the Lord. Takurji Bog, they have this term. Takurji Bog. And the remnants are called Prasad or mercy. Krishna Prasad. Krishna only eats particular things. He doesn't eat onions, garlic, etc. So therefore, we may be a customer addicted to eating these things, onions and garlic. We may be vegetarian, but we like these things. So we have to have some vairagya. We have to be willing to give up onions and garlic in order to be a Krishna bhakta, because we can't offer them to Krishna. They can't be offered in yajna. They can't be offered in sacrifice. So therefore, we will not sanctify or purify our existence by eating those. Rather, we'll become covered, because we are what we eat. So onions and garlic are tamasic food substances. They emit tamasic vibration, which covers one's awareness of God. It's like you have glasses and somebody sprays black paint on them. Black paint, kala rang. Then you have glasses and you could see, but you can't because your glasses are covered with black paint. So tamagun is black, Rajagun is red, and Sattvagun is white or yellow. So different foods, they color our vision. Sattvic foods, they create clarity. They create peace of mind and clarity of vision and clarity of thought. And Rajasic food, it accelerates the heart, accelerates the mind. It creates vikshep, disturbance or agitation in the mind. So they're not conducive for meditation. And tamasic food stuffs, it simply blocks the vision. It's just like painting your glass. It's like, yeah, I can't see. That's why they say, the rishis and the shastras, they say, the minimal entrance requirements to enter the school of devotion is to be a vegetarian. This is everywhere told. And Jesus told, everyone tells. This is the minimal, like you have some college course requirements. The minimum requirement is 1 year of law before you can go to some political science, some higher course. So that's the minimal requirement to be a spiritualist at all, is to be a vegetarian. Because the tamasic, eating of the grossest tamasic food, which is produced from murder of animals and birds, completely blocks the vision of the subtleties of God in the spiritual world. As Jesus said, whatever you do to the least of my creation, that you do unto me. So if you're... Jesus is the Son of God, he's like a guru, representative of God. So he's saying, if you kill the animals, it's like killing God. Because they're his creatures. So he gives us, he said, you take these fruits and you take these seeds and vegetables and you eat and be happy. No, no, we want more. Well, he said, I'm not giving these things. These animals have another purpose. So back to this Vairagya and Gyan thing. So Gyan is always, it says that the path of Brahman or Brahmagyan depends on Vairagya. If one is not, if one is materially attached, this limits one and prevents one's realization of the absolute nature of Brahman. Gyan is always dependent on Vairagya. In bhakti, only that Vairagya which is not contrary or against bhakti or devotion is accepted. That's why we have, in a line of bhakti, we also have, we have renunciation. We fast on Janmashtami, we fast on the Shringa Chaturdasi, we fast on Shiv Chaturdasi, we fast on Ekadasi, Haridas Varya, we fast on Gaur Pranim. This is Vairagya, Upavas, Harivasara. These are recommended, these are called devotional fast days. But we don't indiscriminately fast for any other purposes, or go on some 21-day fast, or to attain some tantric powers, or some mysticism, or some enlightenment from Durga or something. We have no interest. The fasting days are recommended in Shastra, and we are submissive to the Shastra Nisheda, the Shastra Vidhi. The rules of the Shastra are our guides, and the Shastras that we follow are called Bhakti Shastra, and the Bhakti Shastras are composed and compiled by Bhaktas, by Rishis, devotional Rishis, by Ram Bhaktas, Vashishta, and by Krishna Bhaktas, Vyasadeva and Bhrigu, etc. So we, and Sukadeva and Shonaka Rishi. So we follow them. So these are devotional austerities. And everywhere it's told in the scriptures, if one observes Harivasara, then he pleases the Lord. It's Haritoshanam. Haritoshanam, this is the purpose of every activity of human life, whether it's fasting or eating. We eat chapan bhog to please the Lord. But not every day. We may want to eat every day. But when it's Anukut Mahotsav, Giriraj Anukut, Mugiraj Dharanaki, then we offer rubbery and samosa and kachori and pakora and puri and dal and all these items, rasgulla and sandesh, so many things, to Krishna for his toshanam, for his satisfaction, happiness. And we make it, and we try to make it just the way Mother Yashoda makes it. Or we try to prepare it exactly the way Radharani makes it. And we meditate the whole time we're cooking. How does Radharani cook? And how would she cook? And how would she make it? And how would Mother Yashoda make Krishna's kheer? And then we offer it. Chapan Bhog, an Anukut ceremony. And then there's chanting for Krishna's pleasure. There's offering for his pleasure. It's all for his pleasure. Then afterwards we sit and we do prasad seva. It's called prasad seva. That's Krishna seva. It's also for the pleasure of Krishna. We're taking this most, Giriraj Maharaj, ki. Anyway, and more pakori and more malpoa and more sweet rice. So this is all Krishna's pleased. Chaturvida Sri Bhagavat Prasada Svadana Chiptan Hari Bhakta Sangha. That Krishna's happy, Guru's happy, Krishna's happy to see the devotees take prasadam. He's relishing. So this is our Vairagya. Sometimes our Vairagya, this is our Vairagya, or our bhog, our Vairagya, our sleeping. Some people say, sleeping, the devotee's sleeping, he's in Maya. I'm also sleeping and snoring, and you're sleeping and snoring. What's the difference between your sleeping and snoring? You're sleeping and snoring 8 hours every night, so you can go to your neighbor place and go to your shop and make money. So I'm sleeping and snoring for 8 hours every night. But when I wake up, I'm giving pravachan. And I'm speaking, I'm doing yagya and puja. And I'm engaged in Krishna service all day. So the purpose of my sleeping is for the pleasure of Krishna. It looks the same, but it's not. So therefore, even a devotee or a bhakta, even his sleeping is seva. It's not quote-unquote maya. It's not maya. So therefore, even our sleeping, which is a form of enjoyment, ahara nidra maitun bhayam, these are the activities that people engage in, eating and sleeping are some source of pleasure, but they're also service. Gyan and Vairagya are a little helpful only in the start of bhakti because they remove one's absorption in things not related to bhakti. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada introduced the four regulative principles as a slight form of austerity or Vairagya. This is a slight form of Vairagya or austerity. Of course, what to speak of now, but in 1932, there was one wealthy, influential British landlord who was recognized by the British government because he gave a very large donation to the government. So the government, English parliamentary procedure, and the government, they were very intelligent. They would give out many titles to their soldiers and to their citizens. They would give many, many titles like Bhakta Briksha and Bhakta this and that. And this way, a little bit of pratishtha goes a long way. A little bit of honor, a little bit of distinction goes a long way to modulate behavior and make people feel happy. In other countries of the world, if you give money to the government, they say thank you, good night. But in England, if you're very wealthy and you give a big donation to the government, voluntarily, because sometimes they also snatch. Like the Indian government in 1971, they snatched all the money and land from the kings. So the kings became paupers, practically speaking, overnight. And the government became wealthy. But in England, if you voluntarily give a donation, then they will give you a title. They will call you Lord. Lord Zetland, or Lord whatever your last name is, Lord Patela, Lord Gupta, Lord Agrawal, like this. So then the person says, "Oh, do you know I'm?" And then that, and you are legally given that, and there's a certificate you put on your wall, and in the public, if anyone writes about you in a newspaper, it's just like if you get a degree in college and become professor, then you sign your name Professor S.C. Smith. But if you don't have that degree, you write Mr. Smith. But if you have that degree, Professor Dr. Smith. So you become Lord. So Lord Zetland, he met Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. He said, "I want to become a Brahmin. Can you make me a Brahmin?" And he said, "Yes, yes, certainly." And they said, "Okay, what do I have to do? What are the requirements?" He said, "My dear Lord, my dear Lord, I will make you a Brahmin if you are willing to follow the four regulative principles." "Yes, yes, what are those principles?" I follow many principles in my life. I bathe twice a day, I rise early. I follow many principles." And Bhakti Sanat said, "Yes, yes. The four regulative principles are no eating of meat, fish, eggs, no intoxication, including coffee, tea, and etc., smoking cigarettes and pipes and all these things, and no illicit sex, no gambling." And then the Lord said, "What? It's impossible! Absolutely impossible! I can never follow such principles." So this is the slight vairagya which is required on the path of bhakti, bhakti marg. That one is willing to give up these pursuits, these onions and garlic for Krishna. Sometimes we meet people and they say, "Maharaj, I've been a vegetarian my whole life. That's not a problem. But I'm really attached to onions and garlic. I mean, I just I can't conceive of eating food without that thrill, that zing, that taste of onions and garlic." And then I look at them and I say, "Really? You are not willing to give up onions and garlic to attain the love of Krishna? To live in the eternal abode of Krishna, dancing and singing and enjoying with Krishna for the rest of your life? You're so attached to onions and garlic that if I put onions and garlic on one side of the bhajan or the tula, the scale, and I put Krishna on the other side with the whole spiritual world, you're going to grab two onions and tell Krishna, 'Chordo, You'll tell Krishna you'll get lost, and you'll choose two onions over Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan. Sometimes they say, yes. Then I say, bhavatu, tatastu, have you do whatever you want. So this is it's a small, insignificant thing. And then if Indian people only knew what Western people gave up to perform these slight austerities to strive for, we haven't attained even to strive for the love of Krishna. It was so captivating and so enchanting and so attractive that we were willing to give up practically everything. Give up our name, give up our country, give up our families, give up our culture, give up our dressing style, our eating habits, our social dealings, our friends, our lovers, our girlfriends and wives. I mean, wife. wife and girlfriends. And seemingly everything, but not everything, but seemingly everything meaningful and valuable to the ordinary Indian. And in our eagerness to try to get a glimmer of a drop of Krishna's love. And you can't give up onions? They're so important. They're such a wonderful, fragrant, attractive object. And they make you smell so good after you eat them. They're stinky, and they go in, and you stink. And they give you stinky ideas also. So this is not a good thing. So once we're on the path of bhakti, there's no need for jnana and vairagya because bhakti itself gives jnana and vairagya. And this is confirmed in the Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, chapter 2, verse 7. Vasudeve bhagavati bhakti yoga prayojita. Janat yat yashu vairagyam jnanam cha yad ahoitukam. To come. 1st Canto, 2nd chapter, verse 7. By rendering devotional service, Krishna immediately... To Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. What kind of vairagya does bhakti give to a devotee? What is that? Vairagya means detachment. What is it that when we chant Hare Krishna and we start offering pure sattvic foods to Krishna as an offering of love, yome bhakti prayachati, we start eating sanctified Krishna prasadam, reading Srimad Bhagavatam, sadhusanga, associating with devotees, doing some archan or pujanam, and chanting, especially chanting this maha mantra. What happens? What type of vairagya do these activities of bhakti produce within us? That vairagya, what is that vairagya that arises? Is distaste for material pleasure. One loses a taste for material pleasure. And everyone may have an example like that. Before one takes up bhakti marg, or bhakti bhajan, he really likes to go to movies. And he really likes, karmi movies, whatever. Mundane, ordinary movies, sex, violence, dancing, all that stuff. And romance and all that. And he really likes to go to restaurants. One day Chinese, one day Vietnamese, one day French, one day South Indian, one day... this, that, the other thing. And he starts eating Krishna prasad, and then his wife says, you want to go to the restaurant? No, you just make some prasad. Hey, what's this? What's happened to you? No, I don't know, something, I don't feel like it. So he's losing his taste for eating in the restaurant. And then they're sitting down, they're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavat Pardana, day after day, and hearing interesting stories, discussing philosophy and understanding this, these truths about the world and the God and the living entity. Oh, do you want to go? There's a big movie. There's a big movie you just came to town. Do you want to go to this movie? Everyone's talking about it. I don't know. I used to like, I don't know, but not now. I don't feel. Maybe next time. So you lose your distaste for movies. And so-and-so has invited us to a party. It's going to be a dance and dinner party. And of course, you love to dance. But now you're going to the temple, and you go to the evening artik, and the brahmacharis are pulling you into this circle. There's a circle and the brahmacharis are all dancing around in the temple. And you come and watch, and you made friends with one brahmachari, and he's, oh, come, you know, and he pulls you in, and all the brahmacharis are dancing in front for the deities. And you start liking this dancing in the temple for the pleasure of Thakurji. And then your wife says, there's this dinner dance party with your old friends. Oh, no, I'm going to the temple. I remember once in Washington, D.C., we had a summer camp for the teenagers, young from 11, let's say 12 to 18 or so, for the boys and girls of the life members, mostly Gujarati people. They're all Gujarati people, you know, Indians. And this was good for two reasons, because they lived at the temple, and we went canoeing and hiking, and many things. Plus, they have classes on how to offer artik and make chapatis, and like a spiritual holiday for 2 weeks. So the parents would take off, have a two-week break for their children, and be happy that they're with a group of men and women, you know, married, and there was a group of people running this, devotees running this camp, trusted devotees and known to them, and the parents would go for 2 weeks to Europe or whatever and save money, and their son and daughter would live at a temple and go to Mangal Arati and then sleep in the day. It was a nice program, a summer camp for the kids. And we never realized how successful it was going to be, because we weren't indoctrinating the kids, or weren't brainwashing them. We were canoeing and playing badminton and tennis and many sports, all these things in the daytime, and competitive sports. And then a little bhakti. So the kids loved it. They really loved it. And everybody had a good time. Although it was really hard on the t-shirts. Because we don't have that much energy. They were just going, okay, what do I do now? What do we do now? What do we do now? But anyway, it was service to the temple. And so then afterwards, the parents came home. The father said, oh, there's a big soccer match between UCLA and University of this, that, and let's go. And the kids would say, no, I don't want to go. I want to go to the temple. I don't want to go. Hey, what are you talking about? You were on the soccer team in school? Well, I used to take you every weekend to see some collegiate soccer game. And I know, but I don't want to go, you know, that, you know. Watch out. I learned how to play mridanga in the summer camp. I want to go to the temple and play mridanga in the kirtan. You really don't want to go to soccer? No, I don't want to go. So then the father would say, listen, tonight we're going to McDonald's. I mean, you know, no. These are life members, right? They're not initiated. So they would go to McDonald's. McDonald's in America is this fast food place, and over there they serve unmentionable foodstuffs, non-vegetarian. And many of the Gujaratis were like that. So the kids would say, no, I don't want that anymore. I don't want to go there anymore. I want to go. Will you just cook some prasad at home or take me to the temple? I never want to go there anymore. And we never mentioned anything about don't go there, this, that. We just gave them prasadam. Every day they ate Krishna prasad three times a day, or whatever, five, whatever the kids eat, I don't remember. They're always eating. It was always Krishna prasad. And then they became so much changed. And so much vairagya came in them just from exposing themselves to some limbs of devotion. And the parents were amazed, because they became very, like, embarrassed. They said, listen, this summer camp has made us look really bad. Next year we have to come to the summer camp. Because our kids have really gotten staunch and really gotten serious about this whole thing. And what we couldn't do in 15 years, you did in 2 weeks. And we've been trying our best to make them good Hindus, at least, and to no avail. And you took them for 2 weeks, and now they're like pure devotees. You mean, I mean, there was about 8 or 9 of us, lady devotees met. It was a whole team. And we said, well, that's your children's good birth or whatever, but you know, we didn't do anything but have a good time. canoeing and hiking and tree climbing and swing, all that stuff, summer camp. Swing on ropes and jump in the lake and jump off the rope and on tires and stuff. And fun. But we were just, they said, this is the Jamuna. We try to spiritualize it, Just think, because this is the Jamuna River, and we're like, it's like Krishna and Balaram swinging on this rope swing, and I don't know, this, that, So this is Vairagya, that when you perform bhakti, automatically a distaste, you lose your taste for mundane material activities. And this is real Vairagya. The more we increase our devotion to Guru and Krishna, the more we lose interest in material activities and sense enjoyment. It's a natural outcome of the growth of bhakti. What kind of gyan does bhakti give? Bhakti gives realization about the Absolute Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and our eternal relationship with Him as His eternal part and parcel. Sambandha gyan, Krishna Sambandha gyan. Automatically, bhakti gives this realization without independently cultivating it. If we cultivate bhakti, what is cultivating bhakti? It means hearing Krishna's name, chanting, taking prasad, reading a little Bhagavatam, doing a little service in a temple, mandir margin, clean a temple, cut some sabji, take care of the trees and temple grounds, or any little service, some seva. That's like what you might do around your house. You may sweep the floors, wash the floors, help your mother with the dishes, take out the trash or whatever, wash the car, different things, which are just mundane. But when they're done in a temple for the pleasure of God and His devotees, then they're called bhakti. They're moving toward, they bring you closer to God. Once we cultivate bhakti, austerities will become an obstacle in the bhakti marg, an unnecessary waste of time, which should be used for performing devotional service. So we do some vairagya, we may in the beginning, but once we're on the path of bhakti, then we may think, oh, I want to go on a 20-day fast or this or that. So we just lie around all day drinking grape juice. You know, we lie around all day drinking grape juice on a 40-day, quote-unquote, cleansing diet. And we chant one round a day and sleep 23 hours. On the other hour, we spend juicing up the grapes. And, you know, 1 hour juicing the grapes, 1 hour going to the bathroom, and 22 hours sleeping. And you pass 2 weeks that way, you lose 10 kilos, you feel pretty light, you look pretty good, and you've done zero bhakti. And everybody says you look good, and Krishna says you look bad. And Guru says you look bad, what happened to you? So this is not our line. Our line is not the path of beauty or self-preservation, because all that is destined to be lost. But we want to attain love of God. So this is, and then I guess we're out of time, but tomorrow we'll discuss something about the defect of non-devotional gyan and vairagya. We're talking that devotional gyan, bhakti gyan, and harivasra and days that are pleasing to God, they are bhakti in themselves, and they produce more bhakti and more attachment to God and more love of God, or at least they're attributive to love of God, and they increase naturally a distaste for material things. This is bhakti gyan and bhakti vairagya. This is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 6th chapter, Madhya Lila 254. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he spoke this after he himself became converted to Gaudiya Vaishnavism by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was basically a Smarta Brahmin living in Puri. He was a Smarta Brahmin, and he was quite vidvan, and he was a Naya, master of Naya, or logic, and he had many students or disciples. And by associating with Lord Chaitanya, he became converted to the bhakti conception, the personal conception of God. Then he coined this verse, Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga shikshartameka purusha purana Sri Krishna Chaitanya sharira dadi kripambudir yastam aham prapadye kripambudir yastam aham prapadye. So basically he's saying here that aham prapadya, I surrender to who? To Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is kripambudi. He came here, I'm living on the banks of this Bay of Bengal, I'm living next to the ocean in Puri, and my mat, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's mat, and I'm teaching from here, Naya, and mundane logic and the path of Gyan. But he's come down here with it and brought it, he's brought to me, I'm living on the banks of the ocean in Puri, which is right on the beach, it's right in the ocean, it's 500 years ago. And he's come to my house, and he's come into my life as an ocean. He himself is an ocean, a walking ocean. Kripa Ambudi. Ambudi means ocean. He himself is an ocean of mercy, Kripam Buddhi. And what has he taught me? It says, Shikshartam Eka Purusha Purana. Shiksha Artam. That he has taught me about the most valuable art, the most valuable thing. Eka Purusha Purana. He has taught me about that one supreme person. Eka Purusha Purana. That one supreme oldest person. Adi Devata, the Adi Deva, Adi Dev, Jagatpate, Sri Krishna, Jagadish, Jagannath. He's actually opened my eyes. And that all my vairagya and all my vidya, all my detachment, he was about 75 years old. And Lord Chaitanya was 24. Like a grandchild. Lord Chaitanya was like a grandchild compared to Sarvabhauma. He was 75 years old. 10, 12,000 disciples. Famous person, the Raj Guru. He was the guru of the Gajapati Raj of Orissa, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And he found it was extremely difficult for him to even listen to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what to speak of surrender, but he finally did. Then he quoted this verse. Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. He said, let me take shelter of the Supreme Personality of God at Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Shariradhari. Sri Krishna Eka Purusha Purana. That Ek Purusha Purana, that oldest of all Supreme Persons, that one. It's one, yes. I thought it was one. I thought the one was Brahman. That's what he thought before, because he's like Brahmavadi, Gyani. Sarva kalvidam Brahma. He thought everything was Brahman. But then he says, no, wait, Eka. But Eka is, it's not one, but it's one person. Eka Purusha Purana. One supreme oldest person. Who is it? It's Sri Krishna. And now he's coming, now Sharira Dhari. Now he is Sharir Dhari, like Muralidhar, Haladhar, Danurdhar. He's holding, he's within, he's encapsulated, or he's holding a body. He's taken a body as Chaitanya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he's come to teach me about this person, Sri Krishna. Krishna himself has come as Chaitanya to teach me about himself. That is his great mercy, Kripam Budhir. Let me take shelter of that Krishna who has descended in this form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to teach us real knowledge, Bhakti Gyan, his devotional service and detachment from whatever does not foster Krishna consciousness. Chaitanya has descended because he's an ocean of transcendental mercy. Let me surrender unto his lotus feet. So this is his verse describing this, Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga. That his Nija Bhakti Yoga, his Bhakti Yoga, there is knowledge there and Vairagya there, but it is all conducive to Bhakti. So tomorrow we'll discuss something about the defect of material or non-devotional Jnana and Vairagya.